Good morning.
Good morning.
How's everybody doing?
Good. We're blessed and highly favored in Jesus.
Yes. Is this too loud? I hope not. I'm not known for speaking softly. Of course, usually I don't carry a big stick either. Usually. This morning, we're going to talk a little more about, I was looking at this book a couple of weeks ago and decided to go ahead and teach some lessons from this, Christian Evidences. So we're going to continue with that. You know, we might change a little bit down the road, but for now, we're going to go ahead and go with this. Isaiah chapter 40, verse 8 says, "The grass withers, the flower fades, but the word of God stands forever." Amen. And that is what we go by. And okay, we're going to start with some science here just a little bit. According to the principle in logic, called the law of the excluded middle, a thing either is or it's not. Now you think about that. That sounds easy and it sounds simple, but it's also absolutely true. There is no in between. You can't be half is and half not. Either you are or you're not. And You apply to the matter of God, either he does exist or he doesn't exist. There is no in between. There is no halfway. Because there are people nowadays that sort of weave both ways, depending on who they're talking to and where they're going and what they're trying to make as their point. But the only point here in this lesson, as a matter of fact, in this whole book, is God either is or he's not. And obviously, since we're here, we thoroughly believe that he is. And I don't just believe it, I think that the facts support that. Always. One might wonder why it's necessary to vigorously argue for the existence of God. But it's one of those things that particularly today, it's something that most people want to debate. And so I think it's important that no matter what happens, we remember that in the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth. The earth was formless and void, and darkness was over the surface of the deep, and the Spirit of God was moved over the surface of the waters. Then God said, "Let there be light," and there was light. God saw that the light was good, and God separated the light from the darkness. God called the light day, and the darkness he called night. And there was the evening and the morning of the first day. That sounds simple, doesn't it? But when you're talking about the way the universe is, you're talking about something that, let's face it, is pretty large. Sometimes you see today that people ignore this simple fact. I mean, we've all probably, as we were growing up, studied the theory of evolution. Never forget, that's what it is. But, of course, in the public schools, they've forgotten that. It's not taught as a theory anymore. It's taught as a fact. And it's not a fact. It's not true. If everybody actually looks at the evidence, it's not true. Because either something is or it's not. And when you go all the way back to, quote, the beginning, either something came from nothing, that's the only way that evolution could be true. Something came from nothing. Or there was some power that started everything. And if you're really serious about it, the evidence says there was some power that started everything. And that power was God. Now, can you prove God like you can prove other things? I mean, if you talk about, let's say, I don't know, the Pacific Ocean, all you got to do is drive to California and walk in the water a few feet and there it is. And so God is not quite as easy to prove as that. But the proof is there that he is. And therefore, we should believe in him. Now, let's see if I can read this without messing it up. Legal authorities recognize the validity of a prima facie case. Prima facie case exists when adequate evidence is available to establish the presumption of a fact, which, unless such can be refuted, legally stands as a fact. And at least in our opinion, and in this gentleman's opinion, the fact is that, simply stated, that God is. In the first verse of our Bible says, "In the beginning, God." That's it. Nothing else, nowhere else. And you try to think about some of the things that, why we believe this, why this is something that throughout history, no matter where you lived, no matter what your religion was or what your the way that all the people that have ever existed thought, in their philosophy somewhere, there was a supreme being. Because nobody can say, nobody has a theory, well, at least until the evolutionists came in, that actually do try to prove that something came from nothing, which they can't. But everybody, whether you're from here, whether you're a Native American, whether you're from South America or Africa or Egypt or Asia, whatever, no matter what their philosophy was, no matter what their religion was, coming back, you know, going back as far as we can go back, every civilization had a god. Now, was it the right god? Was it the wrong god? You know, that's something that you can debate sometimes, although I don't think you can debate it, but if you look from a scientific point of view, that is something that people do debate. But no matter what you named your god back then and all through history, there was a deity that was involved in human history. And if you look at the point that, okay, let's see. The Egyptians theorized that Osiris, who was the sun god, brought forth various gods who in turn produced other gods. India tells us of Brahma, the father of all creation, supposedly. And he came from a golden egg. I don't know how big it was, know how small it was. It just says that. And no, do I think that these religions going through history are correct? No, because they're not. But it just goes to prove that we are human, and somewhere in our makeup, there has always been this the way that we thought that something better than us is there. And from a Christian point of view, that something was God. And he has been there since the very, very, very beginning. And people like to look at the book of Genesis, and from a scientific point of view, they try to tear it down. You know, as in, because they seem to think that if you're going to talk about creation, then it's supposed to be some super, you know, convoluted, difficult process that there's just no way that it could have happened the way it did in the Bible. Except they forget who God is. And when you literally talk about the first couple of chapters of Genesis, it sounds very simplistic, doesn't it? In the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth. Now, if you look at it from a scientific point of view, they try to throw all sorts of things in there about, well, it had to be this. Well, there had to be this before you could have had life. But they forget that who God is. And one thing that I think even we forget sometimes when we're going through our day-to-day lives, we have a tendency to, you know, we pray to God and we sometimes think, and I know I have done this on occasions during my life, that, you know, are you really there? Are you really listening? And because I think that all people, Christians included, sometimes doubt. And that's just one of those things that happens. But the facts are that either, like I said, the bottom line of all of this is either something spontaneously came from nothing, or God created the universe. And unless you believe that something came from nothing, which theoretically is supposed to be impossible, then the only other possible way that the universe and the earth could have been created is if somebody, some being, created it and made it so that it's the way it is today. One of the things that you have to think about it is the men in countries all over the world, no matter what their religion is, still have this concept of God. Now, where did that come from? You hear all sorts of explanations about different gods in different parts of the world, but however it came about, it's almost impossible to find a civilization that did not talk about God. Now, they called it a different thing, and in some ways, I think particularly since probably the second or third century, some of these people made up gods that were more in the purview of, if we can make this up and then preach it to people, they'll believe it. And no, they did not base that on the Bible, but it did happen. But the point is, they still did it. And now, one thing you have to remember, too, is, and it's all part of what we're saying, is that man is a religious creature. Even if he claims he doesn't have religion, that is a religion. And so the most profound atheist you've ever seen, if he is an atheist, He has religion because that's his religion. And if you really pin them down about that, they have to admit it. But the argument is that it was impossible for a God to exist. Well, what is impossible? You know, you act like a lot of things occur every day that people think are impossible. And we, for whatever reason it is, and why man is incurably religious. And if we assume that in most cases men are rational, it is impossible that a phenomenon or universal religion could be founded upon an illusion. It's impossible. I mean, you think about it. You really, we're talking about the whole universe was founded and created on something that was impossible, or there was something that created it. And remember that evolution, it's based on two completely false assumptions. The first one is that man derived his ideas of God from nature. There are some people that have come up with that theory and declared that this view was unproved and impossible. But now the second assumption assumes that monotheism has been refined from earlier polytheism. And so basically, everybody started out with all these gods, and somehow it got narrowed down to one god. But the truth is that it was the other way around. If you go back and you can look at the evidence from different civilizations, they started with one and then decided that they wanted to be able to have all the others. So now whether you call, whether you're Egyptian or Indian or Native American or, you know, Viking or whatever you want to call it, all of those have similar things as far as the nature of who did what when that created what we have now. Some have felt that there is an innate impression in the human mind of a higher power. And I think to a certain extent that's true. But just because it's, quote, human nature to believe that, also doesn't mean it's not true. Because when the Hebrew writer stated in Hebrews 3:4 that every house is builded by someone, it was suggested the well-known law of cause and effect. And remember, this is 2,000 years ago. You know, don't forget, science likes to think that all of these laws are something that they came up with within the last 150 years or so. Well, the law of cause and effect has actually been here since Adam and Eve lived in the garden. They just didn't know what to call it. There are but three ways. Here is the problem. The universe exists. It must, in some fashion, be explained. There are only three ways to account for it. Anybody have an idea what the first one is? Or the second, or the third? What?
One way is that one theory is that it has always existed.
That's it. One is it is eternal. That's it. It's been here forever. The second is it's not eternal. Rather, now this is good, it created itself. And yes, that's great. You know, we kind of giggle at that. But there are supposedly smart people that proclaim that this is true. They would rather say that basically something came from nothing to keep from having to say that there was a creator. You'd be amazed how many people are like that are supposedly intelligent. Now, the third option is it's not eternal. It was created by something superior to the universe, something that basically did something that created everything that we have and everything that we ever will have. And just to go into this, it's scientifically been proven now that the universe is not eternal. I don't know who this guy is, but he's a scientist, and his name is Jastrow. In science, as in the Bible, the world begins with an act of creation. The view has not always been held by scientists. Only as a result of the most recent discoveries can we say with a fair degree of confidence that our universe has not existed forever, that it began abruptly, without any apparent cause, in a blinding event that defies scientific explanation. In other words, in the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth. And second, it's absurd to even suggest that matter could create itself. I mean, that's been proven. You just can't do that. By that, I mean we can't do that. But God can. There is no known natural process whereby matter could, from nothing, fashion itself. No material thing can create itself. The universe is not self-explanatory. The only remaining alternative to all this is that the universe was created by A, something that existed before it did, some eternal, uncaused cause, B, something superior to it, for the created cannot be superior to the creator, and C, something of a different nature, since the finite, dependent universe of matter is unable to explain itself. I mean, you really have to pin scientists down on this, but the bottom line is they don't know how it was done. And they don't want to admit it, so they come up with all of these theories. And everything that exists can be classified as either matter or mind. Can you think of something that cannot be categorized? Everything that exists is either matter or mind, but something eternal exists because something is here now. Thus, either matter or mind is eternal. But as shown above, matter is not eternal. Therefore, it is mind that is eternal. The mind is identified and described in the Bible as God. There is no other choices. It's just one of those things that science doesn't really want to admit, but they don't really have any idea how it was done. They just say that it was done. Everybody knows what atheism is. Atheism is forced to assume that physical life at some remote point in the past was spontaneously generated from inorganic materials. But the evidence is squarely against that notion. Evolutionist George Gary Simpson, I had to look him up, I didn't know who he was, but he was some famous scientist, and colleagues have admitted that the spontaneous generation of life does not occur in any known case. Others have confirmed that there is no scientific evidence for the idea of spontaneous generation. And there are a couple of other people here that, you know, basically they're scientists that, and they're still evolutionists, but they admit that they don't have any idea how the universe was created or how it has progressed to where we are now. We've probably all heard of Dr. Carl Sagan, and he's an evolutionist. But even he admits that the chance of life evolving on Earth is one in, now let me see if I get this straight, one in 1 times 10 to the 2 billionth power. If you think about that, one followed by 2 billion zeros. It would take 6,000 books of 300 pages each to just write that number. That's how big it is. And yet, evolutionists expect us to believe it just freakishly happened. I mean, the sum of all this is that life either spontaneously generated by accident from inorganic substances, or it was created purposely by an eternal force of some kind. There is no in between. And if you really pin them down, evolutionists will admit this. There's been many debates between evolutionists and creationists. And contrary to what you'll read, if you look at it from the point of view of how debates work, there's never been a debate about this subject that the evolutionists won. Never. They have claimed to have won them, but if you look at how debates work, none of them ever won a debate. And I mean, let's face it, there is nothing in between. Either life just snapped into being or it didn't. I mean, this is simple, you would think, because that's the bottom line. But, you know, either it just came, all of a sudden it was just there, or it was created in a special fashion. You know, all the evidence indicates that it was not just an accident. Now, if you're talking about, one thing we need to remember is if you're talking about evolution, and I was, you know, I was raised that evolution was like the king of everything in science. I went to public schools, and that's basically what they taught. But if you look at it and you pin it down, they simply just don't have any explanation for how the world was created, how the diversity of life on Earth came about. Because the only way that it could have happened is if, number one, everything evolved from nothing, or there was a purpose behind what happened. I mean, I looked it up the other day, and even today, I mean, you can debate about, you know, how long the earth has been here. You know, some people say that it's only been a few thousand years. Some people say that it's been billions of years. But the point is that the only way all of this stuff makes sense is if it was somehow put in motion by an intelligent higher power of some kind. And the thing that you keep hearing, though, is that, and, you know, now, do I believe in evolution? Yes, I do. But I don't believe in the same evolution that scientists sometimes claim, because evolution is happening, because if evolution was not true, then there would only be one breed of dog and one breed of cat and one breed of everything else, because there are, you know, I mean, I don't know how many different kinds of dogs there are, but it's a lot. And the same thing with, you know, simple cats that we have as pets. And if you go into the animal kingdom in the wild, they are discovering new species every year. And I looked it up, and every year they discover at least 7 new species. Some years it's been a lot more than that. And how long have they been looking? Well, they've been looking ever since, you know, science was actually science. But they keep on discovering more. But the point is that while there are certain processes in the world that do produce more modern things, if you want to call it that, or just different things. As we were talking about a minute ago, you know, how many different kinds of cats are there? I don't even know. But it's more than 200, because I read somewhere that it was at least 200. And dogs are the same thing. And if you look at it from the point of view of like livestock, I mean, there are a lot of different kinds of cows and birds, and I read something about a year ago that said there's like 47,000 different kinds of birds. And this is just one example. And yet science will try to convince you that all of those came from one long time ago and somehow split up into all of these different things. And they don't have any evidence that proves that what they call, I think it's called macroevolution, ever was a thing that worked or provable. Now, by macroevolution, I mean one species became another. Now, within a species, I don't think that's actually the right word, but within a type of animal, a dog, a cat, a lion, you know, there can be diversity of, that's why, you know, we have, you know, so many different kinds of dogs, so many different kinds of cats. It's not known by humans, but even things like mice and rats, there's diversity in them. And, you know, everybody loves rats, right? But But the point of this is that, you know, and you'll, and unfortunately, if your kids are still in public school, they're going to get bombarded by this from about the fourth grade until they get out of college. And if they go into a postgraduate thing, they're going to get bombarded even more by people that are absolutely sure that this completely unprovable theory is true. And you need to remember this, talk to your kids about it, because they're going to hear it, and it's just something you have to be ready for, because science, now, I am not against science. Science has done wonderful things. I mean, look at that. It just flew around the moon just a week ago or so. That's science at its best, and I believe in that. I think that's wonderful. I'm a Star Trek fan, that's why. But the point is that when it comes to the bottom line about science is they can only do so much. And you have to remember that there are certain things that science can do, and it is fabulous, whether you're talking about, you know, like we said, the space program, medicine, the things that they've done with medicine, particularly in the last 100 years or so, are absolutely fantastic. Now, have they done everything? Are there still diseases that they can't cure? Yes. There probably always will be. And in some cases, we create the disease. And we don't want to admit it, but we did. And but the point is that those types of things, when it comes to science, are, you know, in many cases, absolutely fabulous. Some of the things that they can do in science astound you. But don't forget, there are also things that they have no idea what's going on, and what you need to worry about is the tendency is, just because I don't know what's going on doesn't mean that I won't try to convince you that I do know what's going on. And that's the way they work. And you need to call them on it sometimes. And believe it or not, some of those people are even members of the church. Not very many, you know, if you're going to look at it from, you know, however, you know, how many millions of people are in the church. But there are people that are evolutionists that are members of the church. And outside the church, you know, let's face it, that's the main thing, you know, that science thinks is just fabulous. The okay, that's the first bell. A couple of other things I wanted to look at. Actually, there's some premises here that can help you if you're going to discuss this with people. And, I mean, do I think you should go out and find an evolutionist and start picking on him? No, I don't. But you need to be ready when the world starts to tell you that this and this and this and this and true are true just because they say it's true. And when it comes to evolution, it's just not. And some of these things are, you know, can faith in God's existence be classified as 1, a blind leap in the dark, 2, a religious hunch, 3, a probable proposition, or 4, a reasonably established fact? And to us, it's a reasonably established fact. Because, now, can I point at something in a book and say, oh yeah, that's God right there? No. But the point is, an evolutionist can't point at something in a book and say, that's evolution, that's how it all started right there. Because they have no evidence. There is no evidence. And whether they're talking about a dog going down the street or whether they're talking about the universe itself, you know, they, you know, love that kind of thing when they're in science classes. And you have to, I personally, and I'll be first to admit it, I was an evolutionist until I was probably 20 years old. And, but I can remember knowing people that weren't. Now, at the time, what did I think? I thought, well, you know, I don't know what's wrong with those people, but obviously everything that my teacher's telling me is true. Well, believe it or not, no matter what the subject is, everything your teacher tells you is not true. Because every teacher in the world, whether they want to or not, they have their own view of things. And their own view of things is not perfect. And just like us, you know, we have our own view of things. And our view of things is not perfect. But our view of things is based on this book right here. And contrary to what you will read, contrary to what you will see on TV, there is more evidence that talks about this book being true and proves that this book is true than there is about the scientific proof of evolution. You know, but people that claim to be logical just don't like to hear that in the beginning, God. It couldn't possibly be that simple. Except that it is. And we've got only about 1 minute. So I just wanted to, I think it's important that we remember things about this because, you know, you're going to hear about it every day. Your kids are going to hear about it every day. And 99% of the time, particularly with them, what they're going to hear about it is the evolutionary tract of what they think is real when none of it really is. Because there is not one single thing that can prove that, you know, what I call, I guess, interspecies evolution is true. Now, within species and within groups of species like dogs, cats, birds, lions, things like that, there is diversification. It's just everywhere. But when it comes to a lion laying down and having a bird as a child, it just doesn't happen. But good, perfect timing. Thanks for listening. Mm-hmm. Appreciate it.